The world's biggest companies are told to pay their taxes. G20 leaders approve a global minimum rate of 15%. But will this be enough to prevent tax dodging? And who will benefit? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. Tax avoidance has long been a controversial practice in global business. Multinational firms make money in one country and move their profits to another where they can pay little or no corporate tax. The world's largest economies are trying to stop this. Leaders of the G20 have endorsed a plan to force the world's top 100 firms to pay taxes in the countries where they operate. And they've agreed on a minimum rate of 15%. The deal followed discussions between 140 countries earlier this month, led by the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development.
We understand that countries around the world, including the U.S., now has to work on the implementation of this deal through their domestic processes. I'm, confident that the U.S. and countries all around the world that have signed on to this deal will now seek to implement it swiftly and in good faith. But that's now a matter for the domestic processes in all those jurisdictions that have signed on.
Ireland was one of the last countries to agree to the 15% corporate tax rate. Its low taxes encouraged firms like Google, Apple, and Facebook to set up their European headquarters there. But Kenya, Nigeria, Pakistan, and Sri Lanka rejected the agreement. Kenya said the plan makes it hard for its government to collect levies from multinational tech giants, while Nigeria says 15% is too low. All right, let's bring in our guests. In Dublin, Richard Boyd Barrett, an Irish politician and member of Parliament for People Before Profit. In Abuja, Mustafa Ndajiwo, executive director of the African Center for Tax and Governance. And in Bilbao, Susana Ruiz Rodriguez, Oxfam International's tax justice lead. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks so much for joining us on the program today. Susana, let me start with you today. Oxfam has said that the OECD tax deal is a mockery of fairness. Why?
Well, the level of ambition with this deal after almost a decade negotiation was very high. It was supposed to be ending the race to the bottom on tax competition between countries. It was supposed to end also the profit shift into tax haven. And it was supposed to be raising significant additional revenues for most of countries. This is not going to be happening. It's a deal for rich countries, between rich countries, and most of the additional revenues will be limited to those countries, especially G7 and European ones. So that's why we are disappointed, because after such long negotiations, what we have been seeing as an outcome is far from what was expected, especially for developing countries.
Mustafa, of course, not all countries were happy about this deal. Why does Nigeria reject the agreement?
So Nigeria rejected this deal for a few reasons. One is largely on the threshold. So as you know, the threshold requires that the multinational companies that are under the scope of Pillar One have to they have a global minimum, the global revenue of about 20 billion euros. And even beyond the global revenue of 20 billion euros, the profitability has to be as low as 10%. There's a further requirement that there has to be local sales about 1 million euros. And for this, Nigeria says that with this, about 100 companies only fall under this threshold, which means most of these companies won't operate in Nigeria, and Nigeria will not be able to get revenues. That is one. Secondly, there is the issue of dropping all the unilateral measures. For example, Nigeria is already working on the significant economic presence, which brings in all non-resident companies operating, including both digitalized and non-highly digitalized companies. So signing on to this deal with a reduced threshold scope means that Nigeria will be giving away a lot of revenues. And I think that the third thing under the Pillar One that is of concern to Nigeria is that There is a mandatory binding dispute resolution that has to be, because, so if there's any dispute, Nigeria has to, it has to be done at the international level, not at the domestic level. And this sort of puts Nigeria at a disadvantage. I think lastly, one of the main issues that Nigeria highlighted is the rate, the 15% global minimum tax rate that has been agreed. Because Nigeria already has a corporate income tax rate of about 30%, although it's not the effective tax rate. However, what we see is 15% is already the threshold, the level for so many developed countries, Ireland, Switzerland, they're already around that rate. So if this deal is supposed to be fair and it should go across all countries, it's not looking like it's fair to Nigeria and other countries. And the big question is, if Nigeria, Kenya, Sri Lanka, and Pakistan did not sign because of these reasons, I'm wondering why other countries signed. I'm finding it difficult to understand the reason why other countries, particularly other developing countries, signed.
Richard, Ireland, of course, has tax rates that are so favorable. They attracted the likes of Apple and Google. How was the country finally convinced to come aboard with this plan? Because they were a holdout for a long time.
Well, I think... yes, the Irish government now, I mean, we're a minority voice in saying this for a long time, but the Irish government and most of the Irish political establishment really played a central role in leading the race to the bottom globally in terms of reducing the amount of tax that these incredibly profitable companies paid. And they have stubbornly resisted any corporate tax reform and held out to the very last moment, even on the 15%, which would be an increase on the very, very low level of 12.5% that's currently charged in Ireland. But I mean, one of the points I'd make, and it bears out the skepticism of your other guests, is that 12.5%, which was already a pitifully low level of tax to impose on these companies, was never paid in Ireland. The actual rate was a fraction of that because of a whole range of loopholes, tax reliefs, allowances, the use of creative accounting by these companies through various subsidiaries. So I would be very, very skeptical that this deal is actually going to achieve any kind of increase in the actual effective rate of tax paid by these companies. And I would absolutely echo the anxieties that your other guests have articulated. And I think much of the motivation of some of the bigger other Western economies was not so much to deal with the terrible inequity that results from these companies paying little or no tax, but was more about particular countries being jealous of each other in terms of how much of the revenue they got.
Susanna, I saw you reacting quite a bit to what Richard was saying there. It looked like you wanted to jump in. I also wanted to ask you, from your perspective, what would the global minimum tax rate need to be for this to be an acceptable deal?
Well, first, what Richard was saying, I agree, because everybody's looking at the 15%, which is already low. But in fact, the real effective tax rate will be much lower than that. And we'll see what Ireland is going to negotiate now when the implementation of this global deal will come to the European level. It's going to be tough, really, and especially on that. So what we were expecting is, if we really want to fight the race to the bottom, if we really want to ensure additional revenues below 25%, it would be impossible as effective tax rate. That's what some experts like ICRIC, the International Commission for the Review of the International Corporate Taxation, have been saying, with people like Professor Stiglitz, Professor Piketty. We need a higher rate, because that's the time for doing that. We've seen decades of tax competition between countries. We've seen decades of artificial profit shifting to tax haven with companies paying close to zero. This is the time to have an effective tax rate that really is on the average to what citizens are paying on their income also.
Mustafa, I just want to talk about some of the other concerns that you and other countries may have. I mean, is one of those worries that you would have these countries making rules that would impact other countries, say developing countries or poorer countries, in ways that the countries who are making these rules aren't taking into consideration?
Yes, definitely. One is what I mentioned earlier, for example, the unilateral measures that are going to be put out if you sign on to this deal. Like I mentioned, Nigeria is already working on the significant economic presence rule, and they're trying to get that implemented. So they're already on their way to do that, and now comes this deal that says, you know, abandon all this, but then we just give you a fraction of a potential revenue to tax. And then another issue is that for the global minimum tax rate. So one of the conditions is that if for example in Nigeria, the Nigeria taxes on these multinationals below the 15% effective tax rate, what happens is that portion that is not taxed will largely go to the headquarter company, and these headquarters are most likely going to be in developed countries. So at the end of the day, the revenue is going to go to the revenue for Nigeria is going to go to some of these countries. So and I think the major problem with this is that these deals are done in a very, very fast, and they're done in a rush, right? The countries don't have enough time to think through these items. For example, Pakistan initially agreed, but then later when they had time to look at this, and they came back and said, no, we're not signing on to this. So these are some of the issues that I think that needs to be looked at.
Richard, looking forward, I want to talk about some of the potential hiccups that could come up here. Is the EU going to be able to push this tax reform into law? And if so, when can you expect that to happen? What's the time frame we're looking at?
I mean, the time frame they're talking about for implementation is out to 2023. Will they be able to? I mean, I'm really not sure. I think it depends a lot on, if you like, the political pressure that we can exert. I mean, the one positive thing I will say is that up until relatively recently, the Irish government wouldn't have countenanced any change in the Irish corporate tax regime and were bitterly opposed to even the very, very modest changes that we're talking about under this, as we've discussed, completely inadequate process. So they are under pressure. And I think the big global multinationals are under pressure, but we've got to keep that pressure up. To make sure that we get real reform where there is, a genuine move to make these corporations pay their fair share of I am deeply concerned because, you see, even how you calculate what is a profit is a huge problem. I mean, one of the features of the situation in Ireland where corporations were supposedly paying 12.5%, but actually were paying on average about 5%, and in many cases much, much less than that, was that much of their tax was written off against various allowances and moved to other subsidiaries. So what were actually profits through creative accounting were deemed to be costs. So they never came into the scope of taxation. And I would be deeply concerned unless we have a genuinely effective increase in the rate, these companies will find ways through loopholes around paying any additional tax at all. So we've really got to hone in on that detail and insist that there's a really effective increase in the rate of tax, and that there's a fair allocation of the tax revenues to the countries that are being absolutely robbed, particularly in Africa, the Middle East, the developing world, for whom this deal is woefully inadequate.
Susanna, I saw you nodding along to a lot of what Richard was saying. Did you want to jump in? Did you want to add to that?
Well, the European Union has a big challenge on that. They are supposed to be presenting a proposal very shortly before the end of the year on the Pillar 2, but decisions at the European level are taken on taxes and by unanimity. And again, Ireland can play a role in making things easier, or just the opposite. And it's not going to be the only country. So what we see is that in the end, most of the decision, the level of ambition in all this global deal is set by what is negotiated or imposed in a way by countries like the US, because it needs to go through Congress in the US, and also by the level of ambition by countries like Ireland, what is acceptable for Ireland, because that will have an implication at the European level. So it's nothing like a global, purely multilateral process. It's nothing like the deal that was supposed to deserve, to provide the fairness for developing countries. It's a deal that is just a concession to some tax havens and to some big economies, and what is acceptable for the business, big business in those economies.
Mustafa, are poorer countries eventually going to be pressured into joining this system?
Yes, I mean, like we've seen already. So for I raised the question earlier, why some developing countries sign? It's not clear. And the reason is sometimes these things are beyond technical. They're largely a political issue. So in most countries in Africa, what you find is there's a disconnect between the political and the technical side of things. So the Ministry of Finance may recommend that the deal is not good. But if you have trade deals, investment deals at the political level, they will just sign these things. And this has significant impact. And that's why I said it's really, really confusing why any developing country or any African country will sign to this. But what I can say is that as it is, it's not binding as it is. And any country that realizes that this deal is not good for them, at this point, it's still not late for countries to pull out, just like Pakistan did, to say no, they're not interested in this deal. It's not fair.
Richard, of course, U.S. President Joe Biden, he's really been driving this. He's been championing this agreement and pushing this. He considers this to be a win for his administration. But it seems as though not all U.S. lawmakers are on board with it, at least not yet. If he encounters significant resistance in the U.S. Congress, does that imperil this deal overall?
Yes, I would say undoubtedly it does. I mean, obviously, I think there's one part of the political system in the United States who see that, the U.S. revenue is being seriously depleted by the tax avoidance strategies of these companies. But there is others who are really mouthpieces for those multinationals and don't want to see them pay their fair share of tax. So, yes, I think it would imperil it. I mean, I don't believe, as bad as the deal is, I don't believe the Irish government, who really acted as champions of tax piracy and operated as a tax haven, I don't think they would have even gone along with this minimal deal if it weren't for the pressure from the Biden administration. So I think it would seriously jeopardize it. But as we've discussed, I mean, even if the deal is agreed, it's so minimal, it's very questionable what difference it would make. And I think we really, certainly what I'll be arguing here is that, we should have a minimum effective rate, but it has to be a genuinely minimum effective rate, and it should be a lot higher than it currently is. I mean, it's an absolute scandal that the cleaning woman in Google in Dublin pays a higher proportion of her meager income in tax than the company she works for that is making billions and billions of euro in profits every year. I mean, it's an absolute scandal. At the very least, these corporations should be paying the same level of taxation that the ordinary worker has to pay on their much lesser income.
Susanna, everybody on the panel seems to be in agreement today that the deal doesn't go far enough. Let me ask you this. Is this going to make it any more difficult, from your point of view, is this going to make this any more difficult for multinational corporations when it comes to evading taxes?
I think it's going to make a difference only when using the zero tax havens. So what we are doing is changing from using the zero tax havens for shifting profits to now an average that it's not even 15%, as we were saying, but below 15%. And that's a reality. We just made a concession to something that is well below. I mean, it's better than what we have, the status quo, but really far from the overhaul of the system that we were promised, and far from the opportunity we could be reaching after decades and decades and decades of tax competition and abuses of tax haven. And we've seen also another vague of tax leaks with the Pandora Papers. We see this is a reality and this is affecting everybody's life. So we have companies operating from those tax havens that will have an impact in day-to-day life, in the way those vaccines are distributed, how the profits of those vaccines are allocated. So this is just not acceptable at this moment. That should be impossible that the G20, unacceptable that the G20 is calling historic, this low level of ambition.
Mustafa, what do you think? Is this deal at its core going to be enough to prevent at least some tax dodging in the future, or are there just going to be too many loopholes that can be exploited?
So it's difficult to answer this question, right? Because when you talk about issues that have to do with fairness, it's either it's fair or it's unfair, right? So I'm reluctant to answer in a way that it looks like there's some sort of a fairness. But looking at it from an efficiency perspective, the fact that if a minimum tax rate, a global minimum tax rate works, that there will be, we will get rid of zero tax jurisdictions. Yes, that seems like a step forward. However, the implications regarding developing countries and how some of these revenues that are supposed to be saved will still go back to the developed countries remains an issue.
Richard, how much is this agreement going to force tax havens like Ireland to rethink, to restructure their economies? What goes into this now?
Well, you see, that's a very good question. And, at one level, the Irish state, the Irish political establishment have got a benefit from this because even though they're very low levels of tax, the sheer volume of profits booked in Ireland have meant they have got a tax, a boon from it to some extent. And of course, there are some real activities in terms of the headquarters of some of these organizations here, but having real employment here. But the problem is that it has made the Irish economy extremely vulnerable because it is so dependent on a small number of firms. So the Irish growth figures are absolutely out of sync with the actuality of the Irish economy, and it makes us terribly vulnerable. And I certainly have been arguing for a long time we need to diversify the Irish industrial model away from this incredible dependence on being a tax haven on a tiny number of multinationals. But the Irish, the major political parties in Ireland are seen very much wedded to that dependence and essentially to that low tax model. So it's very much in play. But the one thing I sort of welcome from this process is that I do think there is a light being shone on the absolute scandal of how little these multinationals are paying and how the fact that they don't pay their fair share of tax is robbing ordinary people across the world of vitally needed revenues for healthcare, for housing, for education. So I welcome the fact that that is coming into view, that the debate is opening up. But it's very uncertain how it's going to play out. And that's going to be a matter of politics, essentially, and winning the argument that it is fair and it is possible to make these corporations pay a fair share of tax towards, you know, the people who generate those profits across the world and towards the infrastructure. Because, you know, I think an important point to make is the lack of investment in key infrastructure across the world ultimately it should be something these companies themselves see a value in. I mean, we've had power outages recently in this country. We have problems with the water infrastructure. Those are repeated in many other countries around the world. You know, in the end, even those companies won't be able to make the profits if we don't have enough tax revenue to put into the vital infrastructures we need to sustain a society and an economy.
All right. Well, we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thank you so much to all of our guests, Richard Boyd Barrett, Mustafa Indajiwo, and Susana Ruiz Rodriguez. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.